Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm, I'm Kyle Madsen. Jesse Tapia on the ones and twos, filling in for Joe Brazil. We're the Insiders, and we're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you until noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. No D'Lo still, just KC.
Yeah.
He will be back. D'Lo will be back next week, but it'll be KC and friends today, I think.
D'Lo will actually be jumping on at some point today.
Oh.
To talk about the Hulk Hogan stuff and all that.
Oh.
Yeah, he's going to come hang out for a little bit.
That's going to be a topic on your show.
Yeah, that hit the group chat this morning.
All right. Very good.
Yeah, we had. I came on late with Kenny yesterday, and by that time, he had been on for like 3 hours with him and Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
It was some dark stuff going on there, Jesse.
Somehow, some way. Well, not even dark. It's just every time we try to talk about the King situation today, we always somehow find ourselves talking about the King situation yesterday with Monty McNair and all those guys and how it went bad. And yeah, we talked Vivek. We just opened up a bunch of wounds, I guess.
Which is, but we're going to talk Vivek here in a second because I had completely forgotten about this clip and you haven't seen it yet.
No.
It's Zach Lowe and Bill Simmons, primarily Zach Lowe, talking about the conversation about the Kings at Summer League.
Yeah, we're talking lack of leadership, all that good stuff.
Yeah, it's tough. We'll play that audio for you here in a second in case you missed it, but I think the reason it always goes there with the Kings is because we don't have anything forward yet.
No.
What we have is Nick Clifford looked amazing in Summer League.
Mm-hmm.
Maxime Reynaud looked awesome in Summer League, and
they signed Doug McDermott.
And Doug McDermott and Dennis Schroeder are here. Like, that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
So, hoping that this year goes much better than people anticipate, and the Kings are good, and they're back in the playoffs, and we're having a ton of fun again. But I think that all we have right now on July 24 is a lot of, how did we get here?
Well, I think you look at that's exactly it, because you look at the roster, and it's like, what is Scott Perry doing? And it's not more so, what is Scott Perry doing? It's, what did the last team leave him with?
That's it.
And like, that's the answer, and that's how you always just come back to it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where all roads lead. Do you remember how all roads led to they need more size and athleticism?
Oh, yeah.
Now all roads lead to, God, where did this start to go wrong? Or what's the worst thing that went wrong? Like, it's just,
That's kind of where it started yesterday. I popped on not knowing what I was getting into, and it's like,
yeah, essentially yesterday, we were just trying to figure out, like, where was it just
like
beyond
the
fixing?
Point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the point where it started to go backwards.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, what do we got here?
All right, so here's Zach Lowe on the Bill Simmons podcast. Bill looks like hell, first of all. Here's Zach Lowe talking about the conversation around the Kings at Summer League. And Bill Simmons chimes in a little bit, but I'm more not concerned with. But hearing Zach Lowe says a lot of what we tend to say out here.
Mm-hmm.
And that being on the national conscience is tough. Here's Zach Lowe.
Just the amount of like collective league-wide almost sorrow about what has happened to the Kings in 2 years, like how they went from the feel-good story of the NBA to like nobody even really wants to talk about them. They're like mediocre and boring and directionless in a way that other teams even are like, man, that's just, it's kind of depressing over there. You know, it's just,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's funny. They just became the Kings again.
Good one,
yeah,
Bill.
They weren't the Kings anymore. And it felt like, oh my God, the Kings aren't the Kings anymore. They're actually like a real basketball team. And then that died within 18 months.
And just like the word Vivek was said over many dinners and drinks, like it's still kind of a mess internally. And it just that, you know, phrases like he can't get out of his own way, he can't help himself, you know, that's that kind of phraseology came up a lot. Like, because what's been the constant between the Beam team and now and all the crappy teams before the Beam team post Maloof? It's the ownership group.
Oof. But
phraseology, that's a word.
It's a good word. It's not that he said anything earth shattering. Nothing he said there was news to anybody who's followed the Kings 4% over the last 4 years. But hearing the fact that like other teams are like, what happened? It's like, as we go back to the what happened to the Kings conversation.
Yeah. So years ago, my wife had a lawyer friend, and her husband was a brain surgeon, right? And I was hanging out at a barbecue or something. I'm like, what's it like being a brain surgeon? He goes, you know what it's like? It's like digging ditches. And I'm like, what? Huh. He goes, it is the most grueling, thankless, horrific job. Once you crack someone's skull open, we're talking 12, 14 hours on your feet, like stressing out, like worrying about bleeds, like the entire thing is a mess. And what is in your brain the entire time is there's no good that will come of this. I am not going to do anything good. There's not enough knowledge about what is where in the brain. And I make one move and that person might not talk again or walk again. Like he said, it is one of the most grueling, brutal things that the reality of the job is so horrible.
I'm stressing out hearing you talk about him talking about his job.
Yeah, that was pretty heavy right there.
Yeah, and so what he said, and just like the look of horror on his face, sure. You have no idea what the patient is going to come out looking like,
totally.
Or talking or walking or anything most of the time. Mm-hmm. Like we're flying blind all the time. And so the reason why I bring that up is because this didn't have to be one of those jobs. Mm-hmm. It didn't. And it turned into one of those jobs in like 3 months where Scott Perry now has like one of the most difficult, like horrific jobs in the league to climb out of. Like, how do you fix this? And it's why we start hearing 2027. Like, how do you fix it? It's like, because the switch happened like out of nowhere at like, we like, oh no, like Fox is getting traded. Like we were here talking about it. Like I came on, I think it was a Tuesday morning, and we opened the show with, I think Kings fans need to start getting prepared for the fact that there's a good chance De'Aaron Fox won't be here by the end of the week.
Right.
And it was like this collective gasp. And then all of a sudden you see our numbers start to skyrocket because everyone's like, oh, wait a sec. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it just like starts flooding in. Damian came in right after us. He joined us, went in hard, and like the deal was being hashed out then. The thing was shifting. Everything was shifting. Like it happened so quickly that you went from this, like what they're saying, a feel good story to a, oh no, there's no way out of this. There's no way out of this. Like, what did you do? And like, I don't think I've covered this team forever. There have not been that many moments like this. The one other moment was when you got to the All-Star weekend and you're the eighth seed in the Western Conference after not making the playoffs forever. And on the day of the All-Star game, Chris Clark leans into DeMarcus Cousins' ear and tells him he's being traded.
Yeah.
Like, be prepared. They're about to ask you about you being traded. Like, of course, we are already on top of that story before it's unfolding. But, like the change in direction so quickly to where you went from being like this team that was building something and maybe had a shot at breaking the playoff streak to a team that like just completely fell apart at the end of the season. And, you know, a year later, you've got 11 first and second year players.
Yeah.
Like it just happened that quick. And you're like, what in the world just happened?
It doesn't feel like there's ever foresight or a plan, or at least anything long term, because I understand the idea. If you have a 5-year plan, you don't have any years or whatever.
You don't have any plan at all.
You don't have any plan at all. It's the Jerry Reynolds. Yeah, that you always say. And I think there's something to that, but I also think maybe it's not a plan, but maybe a roadmap. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to go on a different road when there's a road closure.
Yep.
But, or if there's traffic or whatever. But it feels to me, and this has been the case. I've been here since I started in Sacramento in Sacramento Media in 2011, and I started really predominantly being on the radio in 2017. And this has always been the conversation about the Kings. Is it feels like and to Zach Lowe's point, like there's one constant here. It feels like a constant churn to just make the playoffs and forget what the next year looks like or what the next 2 years look like. Just whatever you got to do in the now. We'll figure out the future later. But the problem is in the NBA with salary caps and with contracts and with player values, when you do everything for like just right now, it doesn't, figuring stuff out later is oftentimes this, where you're going, all right, you traded for Zach LaVine, and now you're just kind of stuck for a couple years. And I think that lack of foresight and that lack of patience and that lack of willingness to let some turmoil play out, let some problems work themselves out, I think it's what has gotten the Kings to this kind of point where, hey, you know, probably not great and you don't love what the future looks like so many times.
Yeah, it's so tough because, like, we're caught in the middle of this conversation where we're blaming Monty and Wes for not being inactive. And then, like, the grand finale, what they did on the way out the door. And again, I want to say this, like, very clearly.
Sure.
I don't particularly blame Monty and Wes for what happened on the way out the door. I don't. Because I don't believe that all of those decisions were theirs. And, like, it's going to be on their obituary in Sacramento forever that this is what happened in the last, you know, 3 months, right? But that was... like, I just don't know how to explain it. How can you go into a trade deadline and just think that you're going to make moves that will improve the team that will clearly not improve the team, and everybody on the outside can see that you're not going to improve the team, and you go from this really positive thing to this really negative thing in like the snap of a finger.
Was it the snap of a finger, though, or did we kind of just all lead to that point where, like, Monty and Wes's bad decisions before that maybe forced others to step in and be like, no, I'll get Zach LaVine now? Because it's like they made the playoffs, beam team 1 year, didn't do anything after that. Mike Brown and the front office seemed like they were never on the same page. And then we get to the point with all the contract extension stuff with Mike, and it's just then you get to the Zach LaVine part. Like, I don't know, like blame the last part on Vivek, sure, but there's a lot that led to that.
I agree, but and if I'm wrong, please let me know, James. I think the snap of the fingers moment was the Zach LaVine thing. Is, okay, yeah, a lot of this kind of reached this point, and then instead of going, okay, to hell with it, you guys are done, we're gonna hold on to our assets here, we're gonna get to the summer, we're gonna hire a new front office and reevaluate in their vision, it was, no, you guys are done, Zach LaVine needs to be here, you've got that deal on the table, do that deal now, because we want to try and make the playoffs this year, and that's what this year is about, and this is the best thing we're going to get for De'Aaron Fox. Like,
I don't disagree with that. That was a mistake.
Yeah, and that to me was the snap of the fingers. Like, you're right. I do think it was, there was...
Oh, it got broke during the last offseason.
Yeah.
Like, the end of the 24-25 season, and then last offseason, whatever happened, it got broken then.
23-24,
yeah,
into the 24-25 offseason.
Yeah. Whatever happened last offseason... Mm-hmm. Like, it got broke, and they could not fix it. And not only that, but they didn't get in the same room and work it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you had to get in the same room and put all of the chips on the table and say, look, like, these little factions and all this stuff, it's got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, you also, like, it starts, like, the LaVine acquisition is one piece, but it really starts with trading Harrison Barnes for DeMar DeRozan.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a knee-jerk reaction to failing to land one or two other players that you had your sights on.
Mm-hmm.
You had got into negotiations with, you know, a guy like Cam Johnson, maybe a guy like John Collins or a guy like Kyle Kuzma that just didn't materialize. Then you do this knee-jerk reaction to just add a player that can score. And it's like, okay, but that's not the style of offense. That's not what you're trying to do here.
Right.
And so, you know, we all thought, okay, well, Jay Triano has coached DeMar DeRozan before. He's the architect of the offense. He'll figure it out. There was no figuring it out.
Right.
Like, and that's the problem that you kind of run into. And, you know, at this point, you know, it's tough because you are looking at like a 2-year reset, but the 2-year reset is going to be like, you know, again, trying not to have the whole thing blow up and trying to push forward, and I'm not sure how that happens, because Like, the one thing, if I'm an NBA player, that I don't want to have a franchise ask me to do is give up 2 years of my prime for nothing.
No doubt.
And that's kind of what, like, they're asking from, you know, whether it's Zach LaVine or, you know, DeMar DeRozan at the end of his career or Domantas Sabonis. Yeah. Like, hey, man, you know, we understand you weren't all league this year, even though your stats were better than the year before, and you weren't all league because your team wasn't as good. And your team wasn't as good, and that's on us. But we're going to ask you to, you know, again, if you give Domantas Sabonis a third and a fourth all-NBA selection, he's a Hall of Famer.
Sure.
He might not make the Hall of Fame because of the decisions that happen here about the quality of your team.
Yeah.
And that's tough.
Man, that's brutal. I feel the need to say, we'll continue discussing this. We got to step aside on the radio side and pay some bills, but I feel the need to say this because I think it comes up a lot, and I think that there's that DeMar DeRozan is polarizing in this way. The DeMar DeRozan signing fundamentally altered what the Kings' offense was going to be. And was not the best version of the offense based on the players they had. It was not a DeMar DeRozan problem.
It's not.
I just want to make that really clear.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
They committed to him being the offense, and it changed the way everybody else fit.
It's the same exact thing when you drafted a guy like Davion Mitchell who was never going to fit your system.
Sure, no doubt. I just want to make that clear. DeMar DeRozan's a very good player.
No, he is. He is.
Hall of Famer. Okay, that was all. Now we can go to break now that that's on the table. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube. It's the Insiders. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. You can hit us up if you'd like to join the program. We were talking about this Zach Lowe audio where he's talking about the Kings and some of the conversations around them at Summer League. We have a couple of people on the line.
Yeah.
TC is there, Mitch is there. We'll get to them for sure to get their thoughts on this. But we'll replay that audio now, and then we'll kind of continue our discussion. So here's Zach Lowe talking about the conversation around the Kings at Summer League.
And just the amount of, like, collective league-wide almost sorrow about what has happened to the Kings in 2 years, like how they went from the feel-good story of the NBA to, like, nobody even really wants to talk about them. They're like, mediocre and boring and directionless in a way that other teams even are like, man, that's just... it's kind of depressing over there, you know? It's just, I don't know.
It's funny, they just became the Kings again.
Yeah,
they weren't the Kings anymore, and it felt like, oh my God, the Kings aren't the Kings anymore. They're actually like a real basketball team, and then that died within 18 months.
And just the, like, the word Vivek was said over many dinners and drinks, like it's still kind of a mess internally, and it just that, you know, phrases like he can't get out of his own way, he can't help himself, you know, that's that kind of phraseology came up a lot, like. Because what's been the constant between the Beam team and now and all the crappy teams before the Beam team, post-Maloof, it's the ownership group.
That was Zach Lowe on the Bill Simmons podcast, and we're just kind of kicking that around a little bit. I do want to get to CC, but the Scott Perry era is off to whatever start it's off to. We don't have enough info yet, but
yeah,
my concern with the Scott Perry group is less about their ability to draft or sign free agents or whatever it is. Like, that'll work itself out. We're talking about 2027, and based on a decade and a half of information, I don't know that they're going to make it to 2027. Like, that's kind of the thing I always go back to is, okay, they might have some plan and they're going to wait till 27 and they got this and that, but okay, what if they get to 27 and they win, let's say, 40 games again this year and they win 36 next year, and then in 2027, man, you know what, now it's rebuild time and they're winning 29 games in service of this rebuild. Is that good? Is that fine? That's what my worry is that we're going to get to 2028 and it's going to be new GM and new coach. And oh my God, what happened? Where did this go wrong? Like, we're just going to have the same conversation we've been having about the Kings for 15 years.
No, I'm with you. I think the bigger problem is that are you getting to 2027 and that's when your rebuild is starting?
That's my concern too, right there. Exactly that. Cause like, if the guys don't have value now to trade out, I'm not just going to assume Zach LaVine and whatever, DeMar DeRozan, whoever, insert players going to have value coming up after the season or whatever. So you get the 2027, money's off the books. Like, what are you doing? Because I don't think you're bringing in a top-tier free agent or anything like that, mm-hmm. right? Like, they've never done that. And I was talking to him about, like, Scott Perry's kind of got a hit on every move up until then. I mean, like, more so through the draft, we have to have some type of foundation. Otherwise, I don't know how he's going to be successful come that time.
Yeah, that's I understand the reality of the situation that Scott Perry might have tried to quote-unquote tear it down this year and just couldn't. Couldn't move the contracts. So you look to next year. Maybe the contracts will be more movable then. Then you get to 27 and they're either off the contracts or they're more movable. I get that. But at the same time, I'm with Jesse. Like, so you're having two gap years and you're hoping that Nate Clifford is a star. Because if Nate Clifford is a star, okay, that changes your calculus. You're hoping that Maxime Reynaud is a starter, because if that's the case and he's going to be this stretch five, okay, that changes the calculus a little bit. If you get Keon Ellis and Keegan Murray extended, okay, now things are starting to kind of take shape. And now maybe you go into 27 where it is, you're relying on a draft pick, and maybe you sign, you overpaid a little bit for a free agent who can help and fit your roster. It doesn't have to necessarily be a star level player. I just think it's about having that flexibility, being able to, maybe Neek is really good, but you know what? They can trade him for a really good 27-year-old all-star. I'm throwing out scenarios. That's, I think, what the financial flexibility is about in 27 more than, oh, cool, going to just go sign somebody now.
Well, I think the other thing we have to leave open is the possibility that, you look at this team and you're like, okay, I don't know what they are. They are a collection of players right now, mm-hmm. and it's going to take one hell of a coaching job by Doug Christie, Mike Woodson, like their entire staff, right? It is going to take a very, very spectacular coaching job. But is there, what happens if somehow they do make the playoffs the next 2 years? That they are able to get this team to, and then we get to 2027, and, clearly there is an objective here to move forward at 2027, mm-hmm. And I don't think that they're talking rebuild in 2027. That's a moment where they think that they're going to be players in free agency. They're going to hopefully have proved up a couple of their young players, are going to there will be light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. But it's also a year where, again, Domas is going to want another extension, or he's going to want out. It's going to be where Monk is entering the final year of his contract, mm-hmm. Where you have a buyout for Dennis Schroeder. Maybe you pick it up, maybe you don't. All of these things are happening, right? I just don't think that there's a clear-cut date where this thing will look right. And during this entire time, the timeline can shift at any moment. If there is a trade that comes up that makes your team different today, I still think the Kings would do it. They're still open to moving, to changing the direction of what they're doing today. Mm-hmm. But you have to find a partner to do that. And so that 2027 thing is, we talk about it as if it's the date where everything will change. And realistically, it's not. Because at that moment, that could be the moment where Scott Perry and the rest of them realize that there isn't a way to bring in free agents in Sacramento.
Sure.
Or it could be a point where this thing has gone so far off the rails that nobody wants to be here. Mm-hmm. Or it could be hey, they're building something again somehow.
Sure.
The Nate Clifford is really, really good. And mm-hmm. not only is he a ball player, but he's stepped up to a point where he's a starter and he's taken over for one of these guys that you have going out the door, and maybe you are mm-hmm. able to prove up something at that point. But until then, it is just a random collection of pieces that I don't know how they fit together at all.
Just based on the way these things typically go, this is not anything specific to Scott Perry or Vivek or Doug Christie or any player. The way these things typically go would say that the odds are that by 2027, even if everybody's gone and you've cleared all the money off the books, odds are that you're sitting there and going, okay, now we're rebuilding. Now we're at square one. Because odds are, I think Nate Clifford is going to be a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
But odds are, if you're picking at 15, 16,
It's tough.
Like, it's hard to find a really good player. You can, but it's just, like I said, this is not they can or they can't. It is the odds say that it's going to be really difficult to get to 2027, where it's the scenario that you laid out where we're going, huh, wow, we're actually in a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
That's a financial flexibility. Maxime Reyneau is a borderline all-star. Nate Clifford's a borderline all-NBA guy. Keon Ellis is an all-defense guy. Keegan Murray's an all-defense guy. Oh, wow, look, they've got a real team forming here.
Mm-hmm.
They could, but the odds say that that's probably not.
There's a very, very narrow path to that. And, hey, look, again, you can make a trade at any time that alters.
Totally.
Because, you know what, we saw it in February.
We're working with the information we have, and I think that's important to note, and I think that's what everybody's kind of doing. if the takeaway is, well, it could be bad, but also it could be good. We just have to wait and see. Like, yeah, no, we know. We're all waiting and seeing. That's what life is.
That's just what basketball sports is.
Waiting and seeing. But it's when you're saying, okay, they've got an arbitrary number, six paths to 2027. One is really awful, where the next couple of years are terrible, and then 2027 is terrible, and then they just kind of tick up in I guess success level, maybe till you get to the really, really narrow path of, wow, hey, they fell backwards into a couple of all-stars with these mid to late first round picks, and now everything is sunshine and roses.
Yeah,
but it's,
you know what it feels like? Did you read Choose Your Own Adventure books when you were a kid?
Of course.
Okay. It almost feels like, you know, you get to that point and you choose, you're deep in the book and you're like, okay, you choose a path and, you know, oh, you slipped off a cliff and you fell to your death, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like that's where most people are with this team right now.
Mm-hmm.
That we already see the end. The book ended, although there's a bunch of pages left. And so we got to find a way to get to the end of the book, which means usually you got to go back and like choose a different path, right? If you want to keep like exploring. And it feels like the path that they chose was so dark. And like any other path from here on out, like, sure, this could be, it could not be that end page that says you slipped off the cliff and died. Mm-hmm. It could be the one that leads to that. And there's no two other options that lead to something different. Mm-hmm. But that's what it feels like. It feels like, oh man, like you had multiple paths you could have gone and you just went down one that made that was easy to see that it wasn't going to work. And but then again, hey, look, I think we're piling on. We're trying not to be negative, but we're ended up being negative. There is some weird possibility that they get on the court and this team finds some sort of, you know, like way of doing business that is successful. And let's be honest, they've got an all NBA center. They've got a future Hall of Famer at the small forward spot. They've got a 2-time all-star at the shooting guard spot. Like, they've got 2 point guards that are fun and, you know, should be at least something. They've got, you know, a young power forward that I think we all think is a very good player and just needs more opportunity. They've got a couple of rookies that you're like, okay, I'm okay. I want to see where they go. They've got Keon Ellis that I think all of us believe is a really good NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
It's just tying all of these things together really is going to be, it's going to be difficult, and it's going to be if it does happen, it's going to be a hell of a coaching job.
So I think what all of this comes back to is, and it leads back to what Zach Lowe was talking about in that clip we played. There's a million ways this can go. There's going to be things that happen on the basketball court, things out of anybody's control. A random trade might come up. A player might ask out. There's so many things that can happen. I come back to my greatest concern is not with, like, did they make the right moves? Did they not? Because, again, everybody is in wait and see mode. That's what we're all doing. I just hope that they can get to 27. And they follow this roadmap and they make, you know, maybe they're on a roadmap to Zach LaVine's going to be here and all the players on big contracts are going to be here till 27 and then we'll move on. But hey, maybe if a trade for Zach, if Zach LaVine's awesome through the first 50 games and there's a trade for him out there, cool. Now you're on a different path.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that this is not get to 27. Things haven't gone right. So now we're changing everything up again because the person in charge doesn't have the patience required to get this thing to where it's probably likely headed.
I mean, looking at this job too, unless Scott Perry is able to pull off some major magical move or whatever, like, this is not a 3-year, like, see what he's doing in year three. It's like, all right, now judge him off of that. Like, if they're winning, like, we're talking right now, get to 2027. If he's got to rebuild around then, how much time are you going to give him to do that rebuild, I guess?
At that point, to me...
Like, how much time are you going to give him to work to actually, now that they have flexibility and all that stuff, like, how much time is he actually going to get to work at that point?
For me, it depends a little bit. If Scott Perry, and I don't think this is happening, but if Scott Perry's just sitting there going, hey, I'm going to be on PTO until 2027... I'll check back in then. Yeah, if obviously not literally, but if he's not doing anything and he's just coasting to 27, then yeah, you're probably not going to get a long time because
what I mean by that, because like obviously, like yeah, if there's moves to make, you make them, but you can only offer Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, whoever so many times, and people are just like, there's not that. So I'm saying if he's not able to make like this move where he's able to move off of these guys until then, like how much time is he going
to
get?
That to me is if he's trying to make those moves and he just can't, and so they get to 27 and they made some draft picks and okay, got a Nick Clifford looks like a starter, maybe not an all star, but he's a starting caliber player. Okay, that's a nice find. Maxime Reyneau is a good rotational piece. Okay, that's cool. I'm still giving him, once you get to 27, you got to give him 2 or 3 years to continue moving the right direction. It can't be you get to 27 and it's like, all right, now you got to make the playoffs.
No.
There has to be. So to me, this is a 4 or 5 year window.
How long is runway going to be?
Yeah.
To me, it's minimum 4 or 5 years, unless the next 2 years are disastrous because of him, which I don't anticipate.
Well, it's very difficult for them to be a disaster because of him.
Right,
like the key to me is, can he find a way to bump the timeline up to 2026? That's the question. Can he figure out a way to move everything up 1 year? And if he can do that, then that will, like, I think it will make everyone feel a lot better about what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be super difficult. It's going to have to take, he's going to have a shrewd move here or there that everyone in the league goes, oh, wow. But we'll see.
I don't know.
Say it, Kyle.
It's, I'm trying to, I don't want to say I'm out. What am I?
Not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel?
No, I don't know. Ultimately, you're right. If you can get this, move this timeline up to 2026, awesome. Like that I think is the goal. And there's needles to thread along the way. Between trying to win now versus doing what's best for the future, and we'll see how those things play out. I hope that the conversation we're having now, where my worry is ownership, and can they let Scott Perry do whatever Scott Perry's going to do, good or bad? Like, you got to let the guy cook. I hope that in the next couple of years, this is not a conversation where there's nothing that happens where we go, hey, are we sure that was Scott?
Man, word.
And that's a dozen years in, man. I guess that's my largest concern. Fool me one time, shame on you. Fool me two times, can't put the blame on you. Fool me three times, F the peace sign.
Okay.
I think that Socrates said that.
Socrates.
Heard that.
Yeah, I guess Socrates. Might have been Plato. I don't know. I get the classics messed up. But all right. Anyways,
the J. Cole as well, I think.
Yeah, it is. What song?
I don't remember, but I know it's J. Cole. J. Cole, Socrates, and Plato.
Yeah, it's featuring Socrates. Plato produced that joint. I don't know. Anyways, that's James. I'm Kyle. Jesse Tapia on the ones and twos, filling in for Joe Brazil. Joe Brazil on assignment, doing very important work for our radio station.
That's right.
Salute to Joe Brazil. We appreciate him so much. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. The handoff. With Kenny Caraway, no D-Lo this week, just Kenny Caraway coming up next right here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center. That's James. I'm Kyle. The handoff with Kenny Caraway starting shortly. Hey, are those guys still there? Oh, you hung up on them.
Yeah, I told them to go home.
My bad to we'll people talk to you guys. Who called yes. the talk line 916-909-1320.
We'll talk to you guys in the next show.
Next show for sure. Taking calls.
Yes.
My
Casey and Jake Gaten today.
Oh, is it? What day is it? Is this Thursday?
It's Thursday.
Come on!
It's your favorite day of the week.
Oh, that's big time.
Oh, you didn't know? What day did you think it was?
I thought it was Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. No, it's Thursday, brother.
Hey, we're going to get...
It's
hey.
Still a Thursday.
You sent a message this morning, actually.
It's still on a Friday on Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Just now, when I said we'll take calls tomorrow, my brain went... Oh, we should do an AMA. We should promote that we just like ask us questions. Like we'll just do a segment of ask us anything.
Okay,
still do that.
But when I started to say that, I went, oh, that'd be a better Friday bit.
Damn
tomorrow's
right,
Friday.
Yep.
Hey, 10:20 a.m. tomorrow. It's an AMA with Kyle and James. Ask us anything.
Uh oh.
We'll answer what we can.
Yeah. Okay, so we were talking at the break and like the 2027 idea, right? Let's just, I think the one thing that we have to get to by 2027 for it to be effective at all is you have to know if Keon Ellis is a ball player, if Keegan Murray is like, if they are that, if they're part of the future, you got to know if Reno is part of the future. You got to know if Neat Clifford is part of the future. You need to know if Isaac Jones is part of the future. You also need to know like what your 2026 draft pick, who he might be and whether he's part of the future. In order to do that, you have got to do some work right now.
Yep.
And that's my biggest problem, because as of right now, I think we talked about how, you know, there aren't players there's a pathway for some of these players to actually get, you know, a ton of minutes, right? Mm-hmm. But is there really? I mean, is Keon Ellis going to be able to play 30 minutes a night this season?
Probably not.
Can he get more than 18? Because I'm looking at their depth there, and
I don't know if I see. I guess this kind of depends. The reason I talk about minutes for Isaac Jones is because I want to know if Isaac Jones can play in the NBA or not.
Yeah.
That's something I think you can find out this year. I want to see what Neat Clifford's got. I want to see what Maxime Reyno's got. I kind of know what Keon Ellis has got. I don't need to force minutes for Keon Ellis.
Yeah, but are you going to just burn 2 years of Keon Ellis's career to like, hold on, we've got Zach LaVine. Like, there has to come a point where you have to do something, and whether that's, like, starting somebody different, or that's just trading somebody, or, heaven forbid, doing what the Phoenix Suns did with Bradley Beal. Like, there has to come a moment where you're like, okay, what exactly are we doing here? Like, yeah. You know, I Scott Perry, on many things that he's gone on over the last, you know, couple of weeks, he said something to the effect that, they want to find a way to get Keegan Murray some more minutes at the small forward spot,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, they want to see if, you know, that helps him develop as a player and all that stuff. Okay, how are you going to do that?
Right.
Like, how are you going
to
do it?
Are you going to throw wins out the window? Because like, that's what you'd have to do at that point. But I don't think they're going to do that. Kenny Caraway's here for the handoff, everybody. So everybody say hello.
Hold on, guys. What's up?
Live studio audience welcoming in.
More fire.
Yeah, like, my problem is, like, how is Keegan Murray going to... If Keegan Murray's playing the small forward, that means that Neat Clifford's not playing at all. Like, and who is playing the power?
Isaac Jones.
Okay.
Come on. Or
okay.
Dario Saric.
Or Dario Saric. Mm-hmm.
Or Domas slides down, because some people think he's naturally a four anyway.
Okay.
I don't know if he is or not. But.
Or Reyno plays the four. Yeah. There are ways that you can find a way. And I think one of the things that Scott Perry said was, like, having a 6'8" small forward would be really nice.
Totally. And this is, I don't disagree. And Kenny, welcome in. I know you wanted to talk about some stuff we were talking about, but... We'll get to that for sure. The reason I didn't read this one on air is because you didn't say anything in all caps.
It was just nice and calm.
I have a different perspective. but that's kind of what I think the inflection point of this year is do you prioritize? We want to see Keegan at the three. so we're going to mess with our rotations for 15, 20 games to see what that looks like and go from there? Or are you going to go, you know what, that's got to kind of go on the back burner because we started 12-5 and we think we have a real shot to make the playoffs, so we're going to, Neek, you're not going to play as much as we might like, and Maxime, you know what, you're not going to play as much as we might like because we're chasing.
Got to get Drew Eubanks minutes in.
Right.
Can you do both, like develop the guys but also win? Like, what is the goal of the next 2 years, do you think, if you were to ask Scott Perry and the Kings?
You mean, are you, like, working with two timelines?
I don't want to throw that one out there. But it's just
that's
like,
what
like,
it is. But that's what that is. That's exactly what that is.
Like, you talk about, we're talking about like developing Keegan Murray, like Scott Perry, seeing him at the small forward more. We're talking about Keon Ellison, what he could be for them. Mm-hmm. But also, like, DeMar, Zach LaVine, Schroeder, like, those guys are here as well. Like, what is the goal of the next 2 years?
Is it to make the playoffs? The goal to me would be, and I kind of wonder if there's differing. I think if you surveyed people in the building, you'd probably get different answers on this,
mm-hmm.
on like what the goal is for next year. Ideally, Scott Perry and Doug Christie will be on the same page, but I think you would love to play Neek a lot and have him be awesome and contribute to winning where you're just doing both. I think that's what you'd love to do, but I think based on what we know about the Kings and just kind of based on the reality of the situation, you're not going to tell Domas, hey, you're not going to play as much because we got to get Maxime Reynaud these minutes. Mm-hmm. You're not telling Zach LaVine, hey, you know what? Hey, you're going to come off the bench, actually, because we want to see what Neek Clifford looks like in the starting lineup. Hey, DeMar, you know what? Hey, you're going to come off the floor because we really like Isaac Jones and want to see Keegan at the three. This is just the reality of it. You're not probably going to see that. So I think by way of that, the goal is probably making the postseason. And if the season gets out of hand and it's like, all right, similar situation to last year where you're kind of fighting for a play-in, then maybe down the stretch you see some more of the young guys. Mm-hmm. But I think for as long as they can, they're going to try and be competitive.
I think you guys laid it out pretty good maybe last segment about – thank you. You're welcome, I should say.
You're welcome.
You know, we talk about like 2027, and James talked about that's not like written in stone. Like,
yeah,
something happens in February. Like, we that makes sense. We can make a move.
That's a roadmap right now.
But when you talk about 2027, I think the road to that would be draft damn near perfectly. I think I laid it out. I think there's Neek, Max, and I think one next year in 2027 would be one. So you're looking at four guys or three guys and an asset. Say you haven't made a draft in 2027 yet.
Sure.
Three, four guys and an asset. Maybe a salary dump here and there. And you take of those four assets – you keep one. You found one that you want to keep, mm-hmm. and use the other three to go get you a game-changing guy. Also, at that time, you got Domas to be how old? Maybe 30?
30, 31.
So if you have a young player, you're able to trade for a game-changing player, and Domas is coming up on a contract situation, you've got money to sign him, he sticks around, and now you're cooking. I think that's best-case scenario. I think that's – in a perfect world, how things will work out. Is it going to work out that way? I don't know. But I think that's the game plan when you talk about a 2027.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, Domas right now is 29. He just turned 29 May 3rd. So he's playing, this is his 29 season. Next year will be his 30 season. Like, there's going to be a lot left in Domas' career. I mean, I would put him as, like, a highly effective player for another 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. at a minimum. And so, I mean, I do see that there's a pathway here for him to be, like, part of whatever you're doing going forward. I just don't know how we got to this point where so many players at the end of last season were, like, ready to jump ship mm-hmm. if there weren't changes made. Mm-hmm. And then now we're at this point where it's like, everyone's back. And how long does this last? And and again, like, I think there has to come a point where, like, man, I don't care about anyone's feelings. You need to know. Like, we have this debate, you and I have this debate all the time about Keegan Murray. The truth is that neither of us could be right. one of us could be right, one could be wrong, one could be, the other one could be right, the other one. We need to know right now. We need to know right now, and you probably needed to know last year because you have to pay him right now. Mm. But now we don't know. So in the next 3 to 4 months, I need to know what Keegan Murray is, because that really changes what I'm going to do with the deadline. Mm. It's going to change like how I move forward with my franchise. And if all of a sudden I got a kid who's an 18-point-per-game scorer, and that's what it is, and there's potential for him to go higher than that, then like start clearing out dudes left and right. Like whatever you can do to get rid of players, get rid of them. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, like what are we going to do? We're going to wait till 2027, and you know, again, a guy like Keegan Murray at this point, he's now going into his 27th year season, and we still don't know who he is. And it's like, ugh. Like that to me right now is the biggest issue. It's that not only is there not like a bright today, but there's so little, you are blocking the ability for players to show you who they are,
yeah,
moving forward.
Yeah.
And so what is the future if we keep hearing, well, they're not going to negotiate a contract extension with Zach LaVine? Okay, that means he's here for 2 years, and maybe not 2 years. Maybe he's here for 6 months. Maybe he's here for 1 year. Maybe he's here for 18 months. One of those things. But in that time, we will not know how good Keon Ellis is, because there's a dude standing in his way that's going to play 32 minutes every night, maybe 34. That's it. And so like, at what point do you clear the space to make sure that we know what you have moving forward? And I don't know how they do that. I don't know how they balance that.
My thing with guys like Keon, with Isaac Jones, you know, even Keegan to a certain degree. I mean, like I said, it could be different opinions, but I feel like I got a good idea about who he is in the NBA. Like, I don't
think
who's
this? Keon?
Keegan. Like, I don't think he's an all-star. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've seen enough of him to say it's not an all-star. He could be better and more productive than what he is right now.
Sure.
But I don't think I have an all-star that's just not here. So you've got a good idea of who we are.
Is it because he doesn't tween?
That's part of it. That's for sure. Somebody put out a video last night of, let me show you 2.5 minutes of Keegan creating.
2.5 minutes?
Keegan creating on his own. And all it was people closing out hard. He never dribbled more than twice. And the dribble was a little shaky.
Two and a half minutes is not that long of a video for a guy who's been in the league 3 years.
So I was like, I just let it go. I was like, you actually proved my point, but it's whatever.
Yeah.
I also learned that he cannot finish going to the right. That's what I did learn too. Mm. But even then, like, I look at Keegan like, I know what I got, and I want him here on the team. Like,
1,000%.
This works for me. If you get anything more, that's gravy. That's cool. But those other guys, like, I don't think we're sitting on an all-star with Keon Ellis or Isaac Jones. Like, I think you know what you have. What you're trying to find out is Keon is an NBA player. So you know you totally have that. You got a guy that, is it fair to say he's potentially a little better than GP2?
Keon?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think certainly more valuable because he can make a three reliably. Yeah,
he's better on the offensive end. I thought GP2 was a borderline, you know, all defensive caliber player. Mm-hmm. Like, he probably wouldn't have made
it.
He wouldn't have made it because he just didn't get the opportunity. But he's that type of player. I think Keon is that type.
Could Keon be Alex Caruso? Yeah. Maybe not as good of a defender.
Yeah, a little step below Caruso. I was kind of sleeping on Caruso, you know, going into this season. The way he defended in those playoffs,
that's crazy.
I mean, that's just elite stuff. And I said last year I thought Keon could be like Alex Caruso. After seeing Caruso with the lights on, man, that's different. That's one of the best perimeter defenders in the game, if not the best perimeter defender in
the
game. So maybe a notch below, but still, I still do believe Keon has all defensive team caliber talent. But the whole point is, I don't need to see him play 30 minutes to know that. Like, I know what I got in Keon.
Yeah,
I know what I have in him. So,
but James, that was kind of where I landed. But then James brought up the point. So you're ostensibly wasting 3 years of Keon Ellis' career.
No, you're putting.
If you're just,
I think you're playing him in the slot that that's where he's at in the NBA. That's his NBA destiny.
Like
a third, fourth guard coming off the bench. Sometimes he might close some games depending on the matchup situation. But I don't think you're sitting on a starter.
Yeah, but I think, first of all, I think Keon can be a starter.
I think I agree with that.
He can, but the team, you're right. The team around him has to be, he got to be the fifth option. And you have.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right now, if he started on this team at the two, once again, how good are they going to be?
Honestly, I wouldn't hate the idea.
I wouldn't hate it either, but does that change the Kings' fortunes drastically?
No, that's all I'm saying. No doubt.
You know what I mean? That's it.
Well, but this would be my point. If he starts at the two, let's just say in a world where like Zach LaVine doesn't exist, mm-hmm. Keegan now becomes your number three scorer, and mm-hmm. we get to see whether or not he can be a three or even a second best scorer.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see it because, you know, Schroeder would be your point guard. He's going to be, you know, you're going to have Domas or you're going to have DeMar DeRozan be the one, and one's going to be the two, and Keegan would have the opportunity to be the third option with the potential to be like your second best scorer. Mm-hmm. We don't live in that world. That can't happen. Mm-hmm. And that's my point. It's not that, like, you're just holding up, like, we can think what we know what the ceiling is of each of these players, but we don't know it because we're not going to know it with the current construction of the roster.
You know what? Real quick, before you say that, do you know what we do know?
What's that?
We do know. Oh, come on.
This is
brutal. Can we get some actual internet in here?
Oh, no.
It does not take this long to load a Google Doc. Holy smoke. Just text. All right, now hang on. We got a blank page.
You trying to load the ID?
Here we go. Hang on. No, yes, but no, for the bit.
I got it.
No, stop. you know what I do know? I do know that you're listening to KIFM West Sacramento, KRXQ, HD2 Sacramento, ESPN 1320 Sacramento's sports leader. Always free on the Odyssey app. Go ahead,
Ken. There we go. I was going to say, with a Keon Schroeder backcourt, you're a little small on the backcourt. You're a little small.
Like, Keon's 6'5".
Keon's 6'5".
Listed at 6'5".
I'm still announcer next
Scott,
to Keon.
Announcer Scott says 6'6".
So look, let me ask you this.
Which is wild to me.
Let me ask you this. Neat Clifford. Keon the same size, same height as Neat Clifford?
Come on. I'm just telling you what he's listed at.
For Neek's sake.
I know, James. I know. I'm just saying.
He would always, isn't Scott Buck always goes, 6'6"? Six. And then he goes and stands next to De'Aaron Fox. I'm like,
Isn't Neek listed at 6'6"?
Yeah.
Neek and Keon are the same size.
No chance.
All right.
I think this plays into the exact same thing. Like, we can't worry how tall the player is next to Keon Ellis. Because that has nothing to do with Keon Ellis. Like, if you're going to be small in the backcourt, that has nothing to do with Keon's success.
Yeah,
it doesn't have nothing to do with Keon's, but it might have something to do with the team's success. Do we want to see individual players? Do we want to see Keegan or Keon average 15 apiece and this team wins 30 games?
Yeah. If it you know meant that you're better, if it meant for that you're my, better in 2027, yes.
Okay.
The question I have though is, if let's just go to that world where they both average 15 a game, we feel better about them moving forward.
So, I mean,
like sure. I don't think
Marcus Thornton averaged 20.
I just don't think.
What did that do for the Kings?
I don't know with. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how much. I think this goes back to the Keegan discussion yesterday. Like, how much room is there left for growth before he hits his ceiling? And I think you can have a real discussion about that with Keegan. I think there's a legit discussion about, man, is he tapping out? Or is there something there where additional opportunity would raise that ceiling a little bit? I think with Keon, I don't think that's much of a conversation. Mm. I think Keon's going to be an awesome defender, and that's kind of what he's going to do, and he's going to make 38 to 41% of his threes.
Yeah, and that's career, just, 42% shooter from three.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. that's what he's going to be. He's going to be a true, 3-and-D player.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a little bit less about, hey, you want him to average 15? Like, no, if he's averaging 15, you're in a bad spot.
No, I would rather see, though, he averaged, what, 8 point something last year. I'd mm-hmm. rather see him get 2 more 3-point attempts in every single game. And if you're going to give him that, he's going to be closer to 11 points per game.
Okay, and this, now, this takes, I think, the discussion is a different way, because I think part of that, and this may go to Keegan, too, when we talk about point totals and shot attempts, this might just come down to the offense. Less than should that player play more or play less. If the Kings are going to average 35 three-point attempts a game, then we're probably not going to see that for Keegan. But Doug was talking about 50 three-point attempts a game. Mm-hmm. If you start ticking up to 42, 43, 44 three-point attempts a game, now all of a sudden, at least two of those are coming from Keon. Mm-hmm.
I feel comfortable mm-hmm. making this statement right here.
Yes.
It is absolutely impossible to get to 50 three-point attempts per game with Dennis Schroeder, Domantas Sabonis, and DeMar DeRozan in your starting lineup. Absolutely impossible unless Doug McDermott is shooting 12 a game in 8 minutes. There, it's absolutely
get
impossible.
Get out there, Doug. You got to go.
It's impossible.
Hoist them.
You got, you know, three of your starters are going to average around 12 attempts per game, maybe less. It is virtually impossible to get to 50 threes a game if that's the case. And especially...
I that's true.
We're talking... 100 minutes between those three players.
But now we're coming to, it may not even be, what'd you say, 12?
Yeah.
DeMar was 3.3 last year.
Okay.
I think Schroeder was in the same, you're probably looking at like less than 10. Mm. Oh, 3-point attempts a game between those guys. Yeah, Domas is a 2.2, so that's 5.5 for, But I think that is a different conversation for me than those guys have to play to develop. I don't think Keon shooting more threes is about his development, or Keegan shooting more threes is about his development as much as it is about the offense the Kings are running. I think is a little bit different conversation than minutes totals.
I feel you. But
it's just tough. Like
it's not an easy, that's the thing, is none of this is an easy answer.
No. I mean, how many years did people say, oh, there's no way to play Domantas Sabonis and there was concern. De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis together because they don't shoot enough threes.
Yeah.
So we surround them with 3-point shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go out and get Dennis Schroeder, who's a worse 3-point shooter than De'Aaron Fox and shoots way less 3-point shots. And instead of having Harrison Barnes at the three, you now have DeMar DeRozan, who shoots literally 3 less 3-point attempts per game than Harrison Barnes. Like, it's very weird and very tough to like say, okay, like, there were no mistakes made here. There were all kinds of mistakes here, just like in your basic idea of what your team should be.
Yeah.
Like, oh, look.
We also got to take into account we're potentially seeing a different type of offense. The offense that you're thinking about and we're all thinking about is a Jay Triano offense. He's not there no more. Mm-hmm. So who knows what this new offensive coordinator may have in mind, may be able to adjust. It could have been a situation where, and we saw some of this in the second year, mm-hmm. where, and I like Jay Triano, so I'm not saying that. I'm just kind of giving sure. another a POV. Is the league caught up to what the Kings were doing, and he had no changeup.
Mm.
Like, it was like, oh, damn, they figured out they like to do this Fox Sabonis pick and roll on the left side, and they're blowing that up. I'm not sure what we do after that.
They figured it out, Mike!
You know what I'm saying? Like, they figured it up, or, like, what was so innovative that year, the rest of the league started doing, and it became easier for everybody right. else to understand how to deal with it, and there was no change up.
Mm-hmm.
So we put it a lot on, oh, this player came here and the offense changed or whatever. They may not have just grown. They may not have grown. That mm-hmm. that could have been an issue as well. And we don't know what this new offensive coordinator, whoever's running the offense, has in store for this group. It may look different. They may have different points where they initiate the offense and all this other stuff that works better for the group that they have.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at the offense not working the way we liked it in Beam Team 1 year with Sabonis
sure.
and saying this group doesn't fit that. Well, they might not even be running that offense no more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but my point stands. If you don't have a way to get to 53s, it doesn't matter what offense you're running. If the idea is to get to 45 or 53s, like, number one, that's modern NBA basketball.
Right.
But number two, it's still going to be really difficult to do when your three of your starters average like 10 or 11 three-point attempts per game.
Yeah, you're going to have to be super efficient everywhere else.
Yeah, and that's where I say, yeah, I may want to get to 53s. I don't have the personnel. Like, why would I do that? Why would I say, Domas, I need you to shoot 7 threes. DeRozan, I need you to shoot 7 threes because I just want to get to 53s mm-hmm. when that's not their game.
Sure.
No, yeah.
You know what I'm
no,
saying?
No, like, that no, for, sure,
be,
for sure.
That wouldn't be bright. That wouldn't be good coaching.
Yeah.
Put them in a position where they can use their strengths to their advantage.
Yeah. I think that's probably what they're going to do. For what it's worth, to Kenny's point, you can figure out a way to win games without shooting a ton of threes. The New York Knicks, 34.1, were 27th in the league last year. The Clippers also made the playoffs, 33.4 a game. The Denver Nuggets, 31.9 threes a game.
Hmm.
So you can do it.
Different strokes for different folks.
I think the question for me would be, are you able to, A, still have DeMar DeRozan doing what DeMar DeRozan does, while also making sure that you're taking full advantage of what Domantas Sabonis does best and taking advantage of what Keegan Murray does best, and then how are you getting Zach LaVine involved? Like, it's a weird fit no matter what I think your scheme is, you know? Mm-hmm.
For sure. Well, that and what is your spacing going to look like with three guys on the court that don't shoot threes?
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. I don't envy the coaching staff whatsoever. None of these answers are easy.
No.
What do you guys got coming up on D'Lo and KC today?
We got my main man, Jake Gaten. He's going to pull up on us for a little while, man.
He's in the building.
While. Yeah, he's in the building, man.
Which,
shout out to my guy, Jake Gaten.
Much to my chagrin, but that's fine.
What?
Nah, Jake's the best, dude. Jake's legitimately one of the nicest people I've ever met.
He is. He's the that's best. My dog, man. So Jake is going to pull up.
That's going to be fun.
During the time when Jake is here, I mean, I'd say the biggest sports story today was the passing of Hulk Hogan. Dame, on vacation, is going to pull up on us because this is a...
Oh, my.
This is one of the moments, man. One of these guys passed. So you're going to pull up. We're going to talk about it a little bit. I've got Drew, the local guy. He's pulling up for his D-Lo and Casey. Well, he's not going to be here, but he's going to be
they
on the show.
They gave you the budget for that?
Well, I went into petty cash, but you know what I mean? We got Drew, the local guy, in the building. My man, Lim Adams, quality control manager and wide receiver coach for Sac State, is pulling up on us. And and owner of Game Fit, one of the great facilities in the city.
Salute.
And my man Matt George is pulling up in the 3 o'clock hour. So we got a busy day today.
KC and friends for real this time.
Yes, indeed.
You got a lot of people coming in.
I was lonely. I was Will Smith yesterday.
I Am Legend?
In the Fresh Prince.
Oh.
Or both.
Dang.
Both work.
There too. Yeah.
I was like, there are zombies here? That's great.
There are zombies.
James and I are done for today, but don't go anywhere. Don't. D'Lo and KC is coming. When I say goodbye, we're going to play D'Lo and KC's intro because they are just KC, no D'Lo.
And then, well, okay, hold on.
Okay. I mean, kind of.
Because we about to go to break.
No, we're not going to break.
We're not going to break?
We're not going to break. No, we're going to hit the music. Jake's going to run in there. You're going to run into Kyle's chair.
Yeah, 27. 27? Whatever it is.
27, no matter.
Oh, yeah, we're going to 28 anyways. Right now. We're going to 28.
Yeah, so you've got time with KC and Jake Gaten. James and I are sponsored by Jiffy Lube. James and I and Joe, we're the insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're back tomorrow at 10. Don't go anywhere. D'Lo and KC, drink water, be nice people. D'Lo and KC starts right now.